Hello and welcome to Everyday Ethics from the BBC with me, William Crawley. This week, help gays, but don't tell anyone we're doing it. The Presbyterian College in its search to find a cure for an illness that doesn't exist. A Presbyterian church in East Belfast faced pickets this weekend for agreeing to host a conference which promotes the idea that gay people can become heterosexuals. 2 weeks ago on this programme, the Presbyterian Church spokesman Lindsay Conway described as appalling the leper terminology used by the Core Issues group, which is organising meetings at this weekend. Lindsay Conway, the Presbyterian Church's Director of Social Services, also told us he was no longer prepared to recommend Core Issues as a provider of counselling in sensitive cases.
Would you trust any organisation that's using leper language of gay people, even metaphorically, with therapy for gay people, with treatment for gay people, with counselling for gay people?
I think I can't. Well, what I've read about Core Issues and so forth, this is not characteristic of it. This is an extreme, William, which I think...
It's an extreme they've engaged in.
Yes, and I think that...
So that's back to the question.
Yes,
would you trust
help.
Them on the basis of that?
On the surface, no, but...
You wouldn't trust them to offer counselling?
Well, I can see why those struggling with a sexual identity would now maybe sort of be apprehensive and look at things differently.
Well, that's Lindsay Conway speaking for the Presbyterian Church just 2 weeks ago. So that sounds very clear, doesn't it? A spokesman for a church describes an event as appalling and says he can't trust the organisation as a counselling group. Since then, however, we've discovered that the Presbyterian Church's own theological college at Queen's University, that's Union Theological College, the institution where future ministers are trained, has sought and organised a specific, separate one-day conference hosted by the Core Issues Group and addressed by the very same Dr. Jim Reynolds, the author of the book The Lepers Amongst Us. So is the Presbyterian Church saying one thing in public and quite another in private? Dr. Ivan Patterson is moderator of the Presbyterian Church. Dr. Patterson, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Is the Presbyterian Church speaking with forked tongue on this issue?
I don't think so. I think that what happened at the college was part of the continuing education of our students. Core Issues were not invited to be there, but an individual who was speaking at a Core Issues event, Dr. Jim Graham, was asked to come and help our students at least give them some idea of his views on the issue and to seek to give them some thoughts so that they can think their way through what's involved in a very sensitive issue.
Well, you say Core Issues were not involved in this.
No, it was Jim Graham who was invited personally.
Well, then why did the college send an email to students thanking Core Issues for organising it?
They didn't thank, if you read the letter that was sent out, they didn't thank Core Issues. They said that Core Issues had brought Jim Graham here, and often when an organisation will bring someone to Northern Ireland.
It's Jim Reynolds, moderator, we should get his name right. It's Jim Reynolds.
What
Dr.
did I
Jim
say?
Reynolds.
Yes, Jim Reynolds, sorry. My apologies for that. I know that's who it is. I think he was there he was at the college as an individual. Core Issues were the ones who brought him across, and when he was here, the college said, come and talk to our students. He is an academic, he is an author, he's a pastor.
Well, let me just be clear about this. I don't want to tax you on this, but you're saying that Core Issues were not involved in this, but the email that was sent to the students, which has been provided to us by the church, says, thanks to the Core Issues Trust, the faculty has been able to organise a special seminar.
Yes, I think we need to be careful how you read the letter. I think, as I've said, and I will reiterate, that the fact that Core Issues is mentioned was they were the people who brought Jim Reynolds here. And while he was here, the college issued an invitation to Jim Reynolds.
Well, let me go on and read from this again. I attach a flyer for the conferences at which Dr. Reynolds will be speaking while he is in Northern Ireland to provide some of his background and information about the Core Issues Trust that's being sent out by the church.
Absolutely.
It's very difficult to say that there's no connection to the Core Issues Trust when you're sending out information about them and taking part with them, thanks to them, in arranging an event.
I can only say again, I know that from the college's point of view that they would not accept your understanding of what was written.
Well, I'm quoting from the letter that was sent from the college.
Yeah, but you can read that in two ways. And you choose to read it in one particular way and not in the other. We have spoken to the college authorities. And what the letter means, they wrote it so they know what it means, was that they thank the core issues people brought Jim Reynolds here. And when he was here, the college asked him to come and speak.
Moderator,
of course, he was speaking at something else. And also, while he was there, they just made it available to where he was.
We will make this email available so that other people can read this.
It is a private letter, of course.
Well, it's a letter that went out to all students, and it's come into our hands.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that it went out, it was probably not the best way to publicise to our students and licentiates. But we all can do things that we maybe think should have been done differently. There was no sense of being secretive. But I think what they wanted was to have an event where they would hear at least one side of the story, and that it would not be in any way interrupted. Because what is really concerning us all is, and the church has since 1979 been so careful to say that the whole pastoral care of all people is so important to us. How do we care for folk who have that same-sex attraction? What is their place within the church? They have a very, like anyone else, they have a place within the church where they can
go
on.
And I understand that. And the church would be absolutely within its rights and entitled to run an event in conjunction with core issues if it chose to do so. My question to you is, how can Lindsay Conway, speaking for the Presbyterian Church 2 weeks ago, distance the church from this organisation, and now we have the church's theological college sending out information which begins, thanks to the Core Issues Trust, the faculty have been able to organise a special seminar with Dr. Jim Reynolds, and then inviting people not to talk about it in public in case it gets unwanted attention.
I think, William, you are choosing to read the letter in a particular way, and you have every right to do that. I'm telling you that from the church...
The opening line of it. I'm not reading it in a particular way. I'm just quoting it.
Yeah, but you can interpret that. It's thanks to the Core Trust people who have brought Jim Reynolds here. He's in Northern Ireland, as it often happens with other organisations, not necessarily organisations that the church or the college have agree with or endorse, but there is somebody there that they feel, well, in this whole process of continuing education, of looking at different issues, here is someone that's probably worth hearing. Let's hear him. We don't endorse him. We don't say we agree with it, but we want to hear what he has to say. And I would have thought, in an open society, that is what we need to do.
Moderator, some will find this absolutely laughable, that this document makes three references to the Core Issues Trust. It thanks them for the assistance, obviously, they've provided in bringing Dr. Jim Reynolds. And it asks students not to talk about this event in public or to share information about it on social networking sites in case it brings unwanted attention. And now you ask us to believe there's no connection whatsoever between this event and the Core Issues Trust. How can you possibly sustain that point?
Well, I can sustain that point because the Core Issues Trust is not something that is endorsed by the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. It's something we know so little about. A couple of our ministers may be involved with it, but it's certainly not something that the church endorses. They have been asked, I presume, to bring Dr. Reynolds here. And he was there, and I would have thought
it... So you mean the college approached Core Issues and asked them...
No, I think my understanding is that they approached Jim Reynolds.
So the college approached Dr. Jim Reynolds without any reference to Core Issues?
I have no... I can't be adamant on that one, but their interest was in having Jim Reynolds and not Core Issues.
And again, I simply repeat the opening sentence. Thanks to the Core Issues Trust, the faculty has been able to organise a special seminar with Dr. Jim Reynolds.
Yeah,
there is a connection. They state the connection.
The connection, I will reiterate, I don't understand why you can't see. The connection is that there was a body organised a conference in Belfast, and one of the speakers that they brought was Jim Reynolds, and they thanked them because they didn't obviously have to pay his airfare. So he's here. If he's free, let's ask him to come and deal with a very important issue that the church needs to be pastorally concerned about, that they need to realise people who are struggling with certain things, how we deal with them, how we affirm them, how we look after them, how we care for them. And I would have thought, William, that to have every point of view represented, and this is only one. I have no idea. The college may well ask someone to come and speak from a different point of view when they're here doing something else. That doesn't say you endorse Core Issues, but you can say he's here because of core issues, and here's the things they're doing. Go to it if you want. You don't have to go.
People are entitled to go to it. I'm not arguing with that. Mm. I'm arguing with your claim that there's no connection between this event and core issues when the letter of invitation mentions core issues three times.
Well, all I can say to you, William, is that the Presbyterian Church in Ireland has no connection with direct connection with core issues. It does not endorse core issues. There are some aspects of it, maybe a lot, because I don't know enough about it, that we would not affirm. And I mean, you can argue whatever way you choose to do on this matter, but I can assure you that the church and, to my knowledge, the college does not want to endorse core issues.
Well, you say there are some aspects of core issues you wouldn't want to affirm. What are they?
Well, you and some others, I think, last time highlighted some of the facts that they want to change people, that there is a therapy that they can undergo. The church would not affirm that.
You don't believe gay people can become heterosexual?
I have to say to you that would be a choice, I think, and the life of an individual person. I'm sure it's possible that they could. But my concern with someone who came to me and said, I'm in a same-sex relationship, would be to say, well, let's talk about this and let's see what the Bible has to say, because that's our core text. And I believe that we can't move from it.
Sorry, moderator, I'm confused again. You just told me that you didn't agree with core issues in their claim that gay people could change, but you've just said some gay people can change.
Well, unless
that's their position.
Unless you feel that some people who have had a gay lifestyle and have changed, unless you feel that they're being untruthful in what they're saying. That's what I've heard. That's the anecdotal evidence of people. So I'm not going to say that nobody can change, but I don't say that I want to put them through some kind of a psychotherapy process to change them.
You think that's questionable?
I do.
Okay. I think that's very clear. Can I ask also about what you understand to be the situation before God of a gay person who is in a same-sex relationship and believes that that is a perfectly valuable and decent and good relationship?
Well, I've got to stand on what I believe. And I think I've got to take what the Bible says. And the Bible, to me, says that that's not a fulfilling way to be. Now, if someone comes to me and says that, I'm going to say, well, let's sit down and talk. I don't believe in shouting at people. I think we need to take people as individuals. Talk through how I see things, how they see things. And at the end of it, each will make up their own mind.
But ultimately, what do you believe that person's position before God to be?
I believe, like all of us, myself included, we are sinners who need the grace of God. And I think before God, there is always an openness for us to come to him in faith. And I think, for example, when I came to faith myself, there were many issues in my life that had to change. There were issues that I changed quite quickly. And 40-odd years later, they're still changing. There's still the work of grace going on in my life. And I think that with people, we take them as individuals. We talk to them about what God is doing in our lives and in their lives, and we share with them. And really, at the end of the day, we accept people for who they are, but we cannot affirm and say this is a legitimate way of being.
One final go at this. If a gay person who's in a same-sex relationship does not repent of that as a sin because they don't believe it is a sin, and they never repent of it as a sin because they don't believe it is a sin, what is their eternal state?
William, that is not my decision. That is God's decision.
You can't give any advice on that?
At the end of the day, I would say to anyone...
You don't believe they're going to hell, for example?
No, I don't. I think that's our own choosing about our own relationship with God. And I think, as I tried to say a moment or two ago, all of us have issues in our lives that we need to keep under review. And that is one. I don't think it's what God wants for you.
But I'm not going to say it won't take you to hell.
I have no reason to believe that that is the case. And I'm very grateful in this matter that I'm not God to have to make that decision.
Moderator, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Ivan Paterson, moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Well, let's stay with this controversial conference about homosexuality in the church this weekend, organised by the campaign group Core Issues. Some 50 protesters held a picket outside Orangefield Presbyterian Church as conference participants arrived. And the keynote speaker at the event was the American pastor, Dr. Jim Reynolds. He joins us now, along with Dr. Mike Davidson from Core Issues. Also here, Mary Query is a psychotherapist and a lesbian activist. Malachi O'Hara is from the Rainbow Project. And Professor Andrew Samuels is chair of the UKCP. That's the UK Council for Psychotherapy. Good morning to you all. Welcome to the programme. Can I start with Dr. Jim Reynolds? Jim, author of the book The Lepers Amongst Us. Tell us a little bit about what your ambition was for these events.
The Lepers Among Us, if you're asking me about why I wrote The Lepers Among Us or why I've come here to Northern Ireland, my concern in writing the book was to write a book to the church in America who is constantly gay bashing, who is homophobic, self-righteous, practices double standards, and generally doesn't welcome anybody to even talk about the fact that they're homosexual or they struggle with it. So that my gay friends and people who have once were in the gay community who are not now told me they wanted an outrageous title to it, and that I should title the book The Lepers Among Us, because they said we are still being treated and have always been treated in almost all the churches like lepers.
Isn't one of the ways in which gay people are treated as lepers, Jim, is the attitude that gay people are somehow unclean because of their gay, quote-unquote, lifestyle, because it's a sin in the eyes of some Christians for gay people to be in relationships?
Yes. The answer is because the problem with that is that's from my perspective, and I'm obviously here as a Christian, and we don't all agree on everything here, but there's a whole lot we do agree with. And the thing I disagree with about with the church is to make homosexuality into a greater sin than anything else.
But do you regard it as a sin?
As a Christian who believes that love rules the sun, the moon, and the stars, and that Jesus is the embodiment of that, my conviction is that homosexuality is a sin. And what I mean by homosexuality, I mean homoerotic sex acts. That's what I mean. So the answer would be that I believe that those acts are sinful.
Well, then, just to go back to that earlier question, doesn't that attitude that you're evidencing contribute to an experience of being treated like a leper, as someone who is unclean, as someone who is sinful by gay people in the church?
No, if I'm understanding your question, because that's a good question. The fact is we refer to many acts as sinful. Heterosexual adultery, murder, stealing, any number of things.
You don't want to put homosexuality in the same category as murder, do you?
No, I don't. But what I'm saying is that we, like me, you know, I wanted to divorce my wife 22 years ago, and I thought I loved another woman. I was being unfaithful to my own wife. And what I'm saying is I wasn't treated like a leper. I was dealt with as a person who had missed the mark, but I was treated with compassion and firmness, but I wasn't told like a lot of these people are, we'd like to have you in the church, but we don't want you to tell anybody that you struggle with homosexuality. So I think we have made the distinction and we have created a double standard. People like me or people in America, we have no-fault divorce laws. I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer for 30 years. We have no-fault divorce. You can allege irreconcilable differences and get a divorce regardless of what your mate's done. Come back to church with a new wife. And that violates Scripture, agree with it or not. But those people are often welcomed in churches, whereas people who are even struggling with homosexuality are not welcomed. They're treated like lepers. And that's what I came to talk about in this a conference, and that's what this book is about. So it's not in, you know, and the guy that's the administrator of the church where I am is a guy who once was in the gay community. He's been substantially changed, and I know that's controversial. I'm not saying he's perfect, But I'm saying I'm in a church where all of us love each other and where we're not running around homophobic and scared of each other. Even okay. Some men are scared to hug a man that they find out is homosexual. I find that homophobic, and that's all over the place in the church.
Let me turn to Mike Davidson, who was with us a couple of weeks ago. Good morning again, Mike.
Hello, William.
You've just probably heard the Presbyterian moderator at the top of the program today talking a little bit about core issues and saying that he is concerned about any attempt to offer counselling or therapy to people that would give the impression that they can change their sexuality. Were you surprised to hear that?
Well, I haven't even had an opportunity to speak to the moderator, and I look forward to that opportunity. I'm sure there's a great deal that we need to understand about each other. I think that the way forward in terms of psychotherapy in relation to this issue is very good training and very good regulation. I think there should be concerns about psychotherapy that is not properly grounded. I think we have to look at this very carefully. But to deny a person, William, this is my personal story. I made a choice a long time ago to stay with my wife. In those circumstances, I believe it's entirely appropriate for me to obtain the support of a professional psychologist or psychotherapist to try and help me to maximize my heterosexuality so that I can enjoy and be who I am with my wife. That is not an indictment against anybody who makes different choices, but that was my personal choice, and surely I have a right to do that.
2 weeks ago, as I say, Mike, when we discussed this, you were asked a question by John O'Doherty from the Rainbow Project. You were asked whether your organisation, Core Issues, was linked or affiliated to any professional bodies. Let's just remind ourselves of what was said.
This is about appropriate care, Mike. Let's be clear. The BACP, the IACP, both say that this type of therapy is possibly dangerous to people. Let's be clear. Is Core Issues a member of any professional organisation such as the BACP and the IACP?
I think what we need to bear in mind is in the UK...
Answer the question. We're talking about
a professional
service.
Yes, I am affiliated to a professional body personally through my therapeutic training.
Which body's that?
I'm the British Psychodrama Association, the BPA.
The British Psychodrama Association, the BPA, and that organisation's ethics code is, if you like, regulated by the UK Council for Psychotherapy, which is why we have Professor Andrew Samuels with us this morning. He's chair of the UK CP. Good morning to you, Andrew.
Hello there.
What's your response to what you've been hearing from Mike Davidson on these two programmes and whether that's consistent with what you think is appropriate as a psychotherapist?
All the major psychotherapy and counselling organisations in the UK and in the US, actually, have concerns at the very least about therapeutic treatments that offer to change a homosexual orientation to a heterosexual orientation. Many of them, including the UK Council for Psychotherapy, have made the offer of such therapy an ethical offence, and it would be right to say, therefore, that the British Psychodrama Association will have a code of ethics, does have a code of ethics, under which the offer of such therapy is an offence. Now, you can't expect me on the radio to say what is actually happening as we speak about these claims for credibility and authority and legitimacy that were made under pressure, I have to say, hearing that clip on your program. The fact is, though, that there's no evidence, no credible evidence, that therapy that attempts to change sexual orientation works. The one thing such therapy does do, though, is kill off the sexual urge completely, which is a very unfortunate byproduct of it. If a person comes into a well-founded contemporary psychotherapist or counselor's office and asks to be changed, which is the scenario that we're often required to discuss, then there are appropriate ways of working with that client to see what lies behind the wish to be changed. what kind of negative messages about being gay or lesbian or bisexual have been internalized. There may be many other ways that the therapeutic couple can take that initial wish forward. And this is good contemporary practice. It is not good practice, and in my personal view and in my organization's view, it is not ethical practice merely to give in to such a request.
Well, if it's not ethical, and if you're the ethical watchdog for the British Psychodrama Association because they follow your code, you're describing this as an ethical offence.
It is. It is. I also said that for the usual reasons of due process, human rights of the people involved and so on, I can't say in detail what is going on about this, but I can assure you we are not standing by. And if you go to the website of the UK Council for Psychotherapy, you will see our latest statement on this, which includes our first statement on this from a couple of years ago. So we're not Johnny-come-lately in this matter. And in fact, I've been working to try to rid psychotherapy of its homophobic tendencies for about 35 years. So we are doing something, but I don't want to spoil or ruin the chances of doing something by interfering with due process. Because, you see, can I just shift this a little bit to the motivations of the people who are offering this kind of therapy? And what I think they're hoping for, amongst other things, is to be able to present themselves as persecuted martyrs on human rights grounds. So if I make the slip of telling you what's going on in detail, I can make that more likely rather than less likely.
Andrew, can I just be clear about this? Because I know you have to be very careful what you're saying.
Yes.
But if you go onto the Core Issues website, you will see reference to the British Psychodrama Association in various parts of that website.
Yes, the British Psychodrama Association has issued a statement dissociating itself, as UKCP, the UK Council for Psychotherapy, has also, from everything that is said on that website. Look, what's happened is that this guy has been pressurized correctly by the chap who was talking to him on the radio a couple of weeks ago, and he staggered out some kind of pathetic response. I'm a student, he says.
He didn't use the word student.
He said he was in training, his psychotherapeutic training.
He said through his training.
Yeah, but he's only a student.
Well, let me just be clear about that with Mike. Mike, what is your status with the British Psychodrama Association?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to remind people here that once again we have the presentation of an individual who is claiming to be entirely neutral in this entire debate, just like we have in the Royal College of Psychiatrists, the special interest group led by Professor Michael King, an active gay man, and
Andrew Samuels now.
I'm just getting to Dr. Samuels. He hasn't declared his own position, his personal position, into this. And one way or the other, I don't think there is any problem with where an individual stands, but I think it's very important that we level the playing fields and so we know where people are coming from. How many people who would come from a conservative position are being allowed onto the special interest group of the Royal College of Psychiatrists so that we have a different point of view?
Look, the comments you've made completely evade the very reasonable question our presenter has put.
Well, I'll answer the question. What is my standing?
You're a student. I know you've got a PhD in an educational field, but the British Psychodrama Association have confirmed, and I've just been texted while we're on air, you're a student at the moment anyway.
Yes, I'm a student, and I've been a student for 4 years, and the day that I telephoned to request the opportunity for training, I was very clear about Core Issues Trust, my intention to be a psychodramatist who is also a Christian, or a psychotherapist who is also a Christian. I have made that clear.
Well, I think everybody listening to this can now get the picture. What's happening here is that a person who is not qualified is doing his best to bolster and boost his credibility.
No, I'm trying to be a safe pair of hands, Professor Samuels, and I'm trying to use the same ethical standards. The documentation that I have presented and argued around this is available on the Core Issues website, and I would urge listeners to take a look at what I have argued and the process that I have tried to clarify. I don't think this is anything other than me wanting to be the best possible worker, the safest possible worker, and to make myself accountable to organizations that do have a very different point of view, because I am aware that it would be an extremely dangerous thing in the psychotherapy room to just affirm somebody who says he wants to change. Obviously, I'm aware of the deep internalized ego-dystonic, homophobic or homosexual issues that an individual could have. And this needs to be looked at in a very careful way.
Well, what you're doing, potentially anyway, is exploiting what are, I hope now clear to all the listeners, extremely flimsy connections.
Not according to Robert Spitzer.
To the professions of psychotherapy and counselling. And I think you've been put on the spot, and I'm sorry to say this, I think you've been exposed as an untrained psychotherapist at the present time.
If I don't
and
train...
I think this is very, very important. All reputable psychotherapy and counselling organisations are, broadly speaking, against reparative or conversion
Not
therapy.
Not one of them bans it, except the
reason.
UKCP.
And moreover, there is the little point, which is actually a very big point. If you want to be a psychotherapist, you have to keep to the consensual standards of practice of our profession.
And that's exactly what I've tried to do.
If you don't want to be a psychotherapist, then fine. I think you can say and do what you like.
Professor Samuels,
I do think this needs to be made very clear. If this man wants to belong to what is a long-established and reputable professional organization, he has to keep the rules.
Professor Samuels, just let me be clear about what we're saying here, because you're expressing views here and you're expressing judgments. Are you speaking on behalf of the British Psychodrama Association?
Yes.
That is the organisation that Mike has appealed to on his website and in other places, and has suggested that he has a professional association with that organisation.
He has claimed, in my view, inappropriately and in a misleading way, he is a student of that organization, and they will be writing to him very soon. But you know, I can't say any more than that. There is a statement on the UKCP website which incorporates the most recent statement of the British Psychodrama Association. Both organizations, the Psychodrama People and the UK Council, utterly dissociate themselves from what is said on the Core Issues website. And our ethics code and ethical guidance documents are really very clear about it. The offering of therapy that is intended to change a person's sexual orientation is not ethical.
I want to give Mike Davidson a fair win to respond to that, because that's a very, very serious point.
You bet it's serious.
It's a very serious point, Mike, because this is the organisation you've been appealing to as a professional connection. And it sounds like a comprehensive repudiation of what you've been engaged in from them.
I'm not surprised. Is anybody surprised? Is anybody surprised who is listening into this? This is just, number three, number four, number five psychotherapist who's booted out because he wants to hold to the principles in his personal life around orthodoxy and is having a problem encouraging professional bodies in the UK to see that in spite of the fact that they regularly cite the APA, they have gone way beyond what the APA
That's
has
That's the American
claimed.
Psychological Association.
The American Psychological Association, in fact, most of the guilds, the American Psychiatric Association, all of them flag up the important warnings about this area, but none of them ban it. I need to draw your attention probably, I believe, to the world's leading expert on harmful trends in psychotherapy. And Scott Linenfeld provides us with two major lists. This paper is referred to 11 times in the APA 2009 document that provided guidelines for working in this area. And the references to Linenfeld go to a document that lists a shorter and a longer table about harmful psychotherapies. Not one of those, neither of those tables mentions these therapies. The whole claim around harm is based on a couple of papers, but particularly Schidlow and Schroeder's paper. All of the information in that, or much of the information in that paper, has fallen foul of a great deal of criticism.
Okay.
This is a very complex area, and I'm afraid what we're seeing once again is an ideological grip that is taking hold of psychotherapy in this country and saying that orthodoxy cannot be represented on our councils. And yes, I'm a student.
I understand that I have stepped beyond...
Just a minute, William.
Okay.
I realize that I am in a very vulnerable position. I realize they will be concerned to remove me. They can do what they like, but they will not shut me up when I tell them that I have a right as an individual, as do thousands in this country, to seek our goals and to look for the best professional support. That's all I have tried to do, and that's where I stand with those who are being discriminated and being forced into a gay-affirming worldview. That has got to stop.
William May.
I've tried not to intervene, Michael. I just wanted to give you a long time to put on the record your response to that, and I want to bring in...
You come to our conference. I dare you, William. As a gay journalist...
Could I interrupt there,
no,
William,
you can't.
Please.
A minute, please, Marie, and then I will be quiet. You come and you see that we prepare, we make available to people a context in which they can freely express themselves wherever they are coming from. That is a good and a unique environment.
Mike,
that's what we're trying to do. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Please do.
Why does this man keep referring to people like the psychiatrist, the very famous psychiatrist he mentioned earlier, and now a journalist, as gay? I mean, you know, you don't have to be a therapist. Anyone listening to this can see where this geezer is coming from.
We need to be very careful, Andrew. Let's be very careful about Dr. Samuels.
You know,
there's a lot of emotion going on in this conversation. I understand that, and I want to be very protective of everybody involved in that conversation. So let's be careful. I also am conscious that Mary and Maliki haven't had a word yet. We've been going for quite some time, and they've been sitting listening to this. And
could I say that
Mary is a psychotherapist, and we're going to come to you first, Mary, and give us your response to what you're hearing.
Yes, I'm a qualified, undercredited Gestalt psychotherapist. Could I say to Mike, he may well have a right to speak, but he does not have a right to practice in that particular way. And over the past 20 years, psychotherapy, like other areas of medicine and mental health, has progressed, and this discussion has moved on. The discussion around the impact of homophobia on the mental health of people in our society has moved on, rather than from the position that has been espoused here of reparative therapy, but to actually tackling homophobia in society. And I would like to quote as well from the Royal College of Psychotherapists, who state, this is in 2010, and it's their position paper on sexual orientation. There is now a large body of research evidence that indicates that being gay, lesbian or bisexual is compatible with normal mental health and social adjustment. However, and this is a bit I think we need to pay attention to in this society, however, the experiences of discrimination in society and possible rejection by friends, families and others, such as employers, means that some lesbian, gay and bisexual people experience a greater than expected prevalence of mental health and substance misuse problems. Now, you'll be aware, William, that on this programme and many others, people have come on to talk about the high levels of self-harm and suicide that we have in our society. Now, I would appeal to all of the listeners, and particularly I would like to address this to the Presbyterian Church, is that we all have an individual and as a society a collective responsibility to ensure that people feel valued with their difference. Now, whether or not conversion is not an issue in relation to this, and I would be quite concerned that as a psychotherapist down the years, I have noticed that the issues that lesbian and gay Presbyterian clients who come to me, their issues have changed. Currently, they are concerned for their families. They feel rejected by the church. They feel rejected by their families. And I'm concerned that at the very top of the programme, William, you said, does the Presbyterian Church have one view in public and another in private? And that would be my concern, is that practising and people who are lesbian and gay people who are active in the Presbyterian Church, they are saying that their ministers, they're out to their ministers support them, but they don't feel that they can go public on them because the ministers are fearful for their jobs. Mm. Now, I'm aware that the Presbyterian Church comes from a long tradition of dissension and radicalism. And I would think that the average listener out there who is a member of the Presbyterian Church would not agree with anything that Mike has said or that Jim has said. And to compare lesbian or gay people to lepers, personally, I find quite offensive.
Well, I'll come to you in a minute, Malachy. I know Jim's trying to get back in here, and Jim has made it clear that the use of the word leper was meant to spin this a bit to refocus the conversation. That's true, isn't it, Jim?
Yes. The whole point was a good bit of what she just said about the fact that the church is homophobic and is mistreating people was exactly what I was speaking to. And so if somebody is talking about this book but has not read this book, then I'm a lawyer. And what they're doing is practicing irresponsible hearsay. That's what they're doing. And they're in danger of really slandering me because my homosexual friends in Texas think these people are crazy who are going off about this because I'm the only one down there standing up for them. And so I'm over here with...
Jim, to be fair, you're standing up for them, yes, but you're also saying that what they're engaged in, homosexuality, is sinful and it is something that they can be healed of.
I'm saying that, but that's not the thrust of the book. The thrust,
yeah, no, I understand that.
The thrust of the book is written to the homophobia of the church.
One could not describe your position as a quote-unquote pro-gay position.
No, that's exactly right.
Just to be clear about that.
But you know what? To say that you think it's a... To say that you think somebody should change, yeah, I find this discussion in Northern Ireland really interesting that people are so concerned that some people want to change. Camille Paglia, a lesbian activist in Pennsylvania, she asked the question, is the gay identity so fragile that it cannot bear the thought that some people might not want to be gay? Helping gays to learn how to function heterosexually if they wish is a perfectly worthy aim. That's a lesbian speaking in the United States. So why is it that I acknowledge some people have never changed, but I'm a lawyer. Some people have changed. I know them. So we can sit here and pontificate about it all. But I don't understand out of my American context why we can't live and let live with this. I think the church has been oppressive in the past. But some of what I'm hearing on this talk show is oppressive now from the other direction. And I wonder about that. Do we understand that we live in a democracy here? Is this a democracy or is it going to be now? We had the tyranny of the church for a while, and now we're going to have the tyranny of the seculars. I think we got to understand we all belong here. I'm happy to sit here with people that disagree with me, and they have a perfect right to disagree with me. But not to tell me that I don't have a right to decide that I don't want to be gay, straight, or whatever.
Of course you personally have that right. No one's saying you don't. The question is whether professional psychotherapists who claim a professional connection to an oversight body should be engaged in efforts to change people.
If I wanted to be changed and I go to Mike Davidson or I go to somebody here and I say I desperately want to be changed and it's not because there's any subgroup in my head, there's not any pressure from me, I just want to change. I don't want to live that life.
Malachy, you've been sitting very patiently.
Yeah,
give us a view.
Thank you very
so
much.
I can't do that. I can't go to that person and say I'd like to change. I find that oppressive. That is oppressive.
Malachy, can I pause you for a second? Since Jim's forcing that question, we should put it to Andrew.
Yes.
I think that any health professional would agree with me when I say that merely receiving a request for such and such a treatment especially if the request was stimulated by false advertising, bad science, and quite frankly, prejudice in this case.
How do you know it is? Let me finish. I'm a lawyer.
Merely agreeing to a request of somebody who may have an emotional difficulty, not in fact connected with their sexual orientation, but just in general, merely agreeing to the request without reference to best practice and the evidence base in the discipline which is being carried out, to do that is irresponsible and unethical. What you're doing is manufacturing a very simplistic rights-based argument, which, when boiled down, comes like this. Any doctor, any psychologist, any psychotherapist, any counselor must do what their client asks them to do. Now, that isn't even true in law, okay? That is just too simple. It's actually a distortion.
Nobody said that.
Of the rights argument.
Nobody said that. They obviously have a right to check me out and find out what's motivating me, but I find it oppressive and a denial of human rights that you would not help me get help. Though you disagree with me, I don't understand why. What is operating on your end of it? If you check me out and nobody's pushing me, I just want it, but I can't get that kind of help. I find that oppressive. I think the church has been oppressive, and I find your position oppressive.
So you're bound to find it oppressive. But I do have to say what I was saying earlier when our host, I think, probably correctly intervened because things were getting a bit heated. A lot of what's being said here is terribly prejudiced. There's a kind of them and us.
I reject that.
Please, let me finish. There's a them and us here.
The prejudiced person may be speaking right now.
One at a time. Let's hear it from Andrew. Then you can reply to him. And then Malachy really, really must come in.
Yes, I know. Okay. We have heard attempts on this program live to slur people because they're homosexual. It's quite extraordinary that this isn't...
And calling people geezers isn't slandering people.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I mean, really, that's far too sensitive, my friend. Calling somebody a geezer where I come from is a completely friendly thing to do, like mate or something like that.
Well,
please.
Thank you for clarifying.
I don't think there's any
that.
Moral taint in the word geezer, but let's keep focused.
Well, a good professional doesn't only do what the client asks. Part of what people are paying for is...
Nobody said they do.
...for the professional to exit. Well, in effect, you have, actually. You've tried to make it a human rights issue. The evidence is that conversion or reparative therapy either doesn't work or does harm.
And that's wrong.
While I was listening to you, I was looking at the position.
You've
statements.
Only read certain studies.
I've been looking at the position.
That's all you've done. I'm a lawyer. We throw that out of court.
I think Jim's misrepresenting the argument here that this is actually up for debate.
All Malachy, thank you for taking the initiative to start speaking.
Sorry, William. I didn't think I would get an opportunity.
Go ahead.
Otherwise.
You're absolutely right to do it. Go for it.
I think this argument has been pretty much settled. Andrew has come on here and reaffirmed the position. We have seen numerous references to the various positions, whether it's American, nationally here in the UK and Ireland or internationally, that reparative conversion therapy does not work, is not ethical, and does further damage to people who access it. Now, Jim's point is specifically around the opportunity for someone to request a therapy. Any health professional operating in good faith will not offer a type of therapeutic intervention that does not work. And all the evidence
works
base
for
says,
some people, Malachy.
Mike, you talked plenty earlier, so please give me an opportunity to speak. Any health professional should not, in good faith, offer someone a therapeutic intervention that has been deemed as further damaging.
By
we
the
go
gay
back,
and lesbian
right,
special interest
and this is,
group
and this
of the
is
Royal
the
College
point,
of Psychiatrists.
And this is the argument that both Jim and Mike have somehow coalesced around this morning, that this is actually about a human rights issue on two particular fronts. One, that an individual has the right to access any type of therapy.
No, not
the
any
emphasis,
type.
The emphasis, Mike, please, the emphasis is on any type of therapy. And Mike is then playing the argument that the professional bodies have been hijacked by gay and lesbian special interest groups. Rather, when science does not agree with people, then science is
read
flawed.
Read Yarhouse and Jones. Read Robert Spitzer.
I think you're very selective in who you choose. We talk
yes,
about the American psychiatric
area. There are
psychological
for and against.
Mike, we have heard from the professional bodies that these type of therapies...
Who are many of them actively gay, and that's... quite fine, but we need to understand that we are
regardless of the sexual orientation of these professionals, regardless of their sexual orientation, whether they're gay, lesbian, bisexual or heterosexual, they are scientists, they are professionals. And you're casting a slur by saying that it's only gay activists who have hijacked this movement. It's a consensus amongst the relevant professionals.
Well, there
your
certainly needs to be a correction.
Does not work. It is damaging.
For some, it doesn't.
It is damaging.
Now, for some, it might be. You're correct.
No,
can
I say
can we pause there so that Mary can get a word?
I agree totally with Malachy that this has already... This has been established. It may take some time for certain people to catch up with what is good psychotherapeutic practice. And, you know, it has become more and more evident with research and I would say, Jim, you know, quite extensive research that shows the impact of racism, of homophobia and of the impact of having a low income has on our mental health. And I think with the recession, we're seeing that becoming even more evident. Now, I do think that this is a religious affairs program. It is not a mental health program. I would like to bring it back to the responsibility of the listeners out there is that clients are saying to me is that they feel that they are invisible within the Christian churches. They feel that they don't have a voice. And my challenge would be to individuals out there, whether you're a member of a congregation or whether you don't practice any religion, is that you personally can improve the mental health of our society.
Just sit back a little bit from the mic, Mary.
By being more open and tolerant and celebrating difference. We have moved beyond being tolerated in this society. We want to be celebrated. And I'm beginning to feel that that Belfast and Derry are beginning to celebrate the fact that lesbian and gay people exist in our society. We make enormous contributions to the well-being of heterosexual and lesbian and gay people, and we would like that recognised. That is what improves the general mental health of the population. I wouldn't want to do myself out of a job, but we are not here talking about individuals having access to therapeutic services only. We are talking about the collective responsibility of everyone listening to actually improve our mental health, the mental health of everyone in society. And that is by being more open, by acknowledging the lesbian and gay members of your congregation and by giving them a voice. I am not sure that the Presbyterian Church is doing that by supporting Mike coming to speak. As far as I know...
It's Jim Reynolds who's speaking.
Yeah, and that's a particular turn concern that the Presbyterian Church and the moderator and the statements made 2 weeks ago when John O'Doherty from the Rainbow Project was on this programme and the statements earlier this morning, that this is where people are learning their training. The only organisation in terms of sexual orientation who's been invited to speak is Core Issues Trust via the proxy of Jim Reynolds, who's going to talk about lepers and that some people are gay and some people are not gay anymore, belying or implying the idea that there's reparative or conversion therapy that can work and that people can change their sexual orientation. That's the issue. Why no gay-affirming faith group? Why none of the well-established LGBT sector organisations? If the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, particularly for their college and their trainee ministers, if they wanted to have an open and frank conversation around this, there are much better individuals and organisations placed to have this conversation than a therapist who has been discredited and a therapy that doesn't work.
We're nearly out of time. I want to give Mike Davison another response to pick up some of those points that have been made, and then a final comment from Andrew.
The invitation to the Presbyterian College was extended to Jim Reynolds. In fairness to the moderator, he didn't sanction invitations that went out. The addresses of ministers is in the public domain. Two members of our Council of Reference chose to sign letters. So I think you must be very careful in what we say to the moderator. In respect of my own position, I have tried to be transparent with my training organisation. I contacted Dr. Samuel several months ago. His email correspondence, which I will make available to any journalist who wants to see it, was nothing short of dismissive. And I find that his inability to work with a section of our community that has legitimate needs should be of great concern, both to secular psychotherapists and to the church.
Mike, just to be clear about this, as someone who is a trainee in the British Psychodrama Association, you would say you have never given the impression that you're a fully qualified and accredited psychotherapist.
I am required, as a condition of my trainee status, to communicate that I am a trainee. I have done that in every instance, as far as I know. The thing is, William, if I don't use well-grounded psychotherapeutic principles, I am denounced as a quack. Mm-hmm. If I try to qualify, well, look at where you land, because the real issue is the thing that is really on the table is the fact that if you hold to basic Christian principles in this specific area, you may not be a psychotherapist. Let's be clear. That's exactly what the UKCP, which has gone way beyond the AP, is trying to do. That's what the BACP has done. That's the new UK that we are living in. And that's what I think we need to check very carefully. I'm all for accountability and doing things in a way that is going to be supported to those who choose to be gay, but we need to do the same thing for those who are the minority group who do not wish to identify as gay.
Andrew Samuels, you've got a name check there. Do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I think I must. At least I've been consistent. I think the people who are listening to this program can see quite clearly what the issues are. Here we have somebody who, when pressed, has reached out desperately for some shards of professional respectability and unfortunately has got himself into a very difficult personal situation. I do feel sorry about that. He knows perfectly well that the organization with which he's training has signed up to a code of ethics. Indeed, he's probably signed a piece of paper saying he understands these codes of ethics and accepts that he will work
I
under
wrote
them.
To you
what
and
happened,
I explained
please,
my position
and
you dismissed...
And I told you exactly what I'm saying now.
No, you didn't. You told me that you were going on holiday and you totally denied me the opportunity of communicating with me. I'm not even sure, Professor Samuels, that you really read the arguments that I presented to you. Surely you owe me that much.
Well, I've heard them now and I've been to your website and all I can say is that both personally and professionally and in my role as representative of both the UKCP and the organization with which you're training, what you are doing is, whether you like it and can accept it or not, considered unethical. And you just got to come to terms with this. But I want to say one other thing.
I'll be quite willing to readjust myself.
You're basically not looking at your motivation here. You're coming from a religious place.
And where are you coming from, Dr. Samuels?
Please, you have to let me finish. You had a good chance to have a go. I don't remember saying that I was on holiday, and if it was over-dismissive, I'm sorry. But the fact is that you are not looking at what you're doing. What you're doing is an enactment of your own personal prejudices, and it's coming out of a set of principles that just don't fit with the present ethical consensus in the profession that you want to join. The thing you really need to question is, why do you so much want to belong to a profession whose principles, values, and ethics are very different from your own?
Let me answer that question.
I'm going to let you answer that, Mike, and I have to say, Andrew, this has got to be the final point, because we've, in order to put this in context, we've let this go quite some way, Mike, but these are very serious points that have been put to you by Andrew Samuels. I want to give you a final response, but please be as succinct as you can.
Because in 1973, a decision was made that set us in a trajectory that stopped us from researching this whole issue. Obtaining money to do research around the issue of homosexuality is just about impossible. Anybody who wants to lift their head above the parapet is blown from here to Mars. We've got to have a good and reasonable discussion. I'd like to ask the Belfast City Council to consider helping us to fund an event that would allow serious scientists who would support a gay affirming model meet with serious scientists who come from a conservative position, and let's have a well-moderated discussion that is transparent and open, instead of this thing that shuts up anybody who dissents from the current status of ethical views in these organisations.
Could I say that the Belfast City Council has the responsibility to celebrate the existence of people like Malachy and myself anyone else? This debate has moved on, and I feel that we're now moving into some sort of personal issue around Mike's accreditation.
Well, look, we're
this
not.
Is not
we're
the
just,
to do that.
I'm afraid we have to stop. The debate has to stop, as I say. My thanks to Dr. Jim Reynolds, Dr. Mike Davidson, Professor Andrew Samuels, Malachy O'Hara, and Mary Querrey. Let's take a break from all of that. Let's take a slightly satirical look now at the world through the eyes of Mike Philpott.
The Fruitcake of the Week award goes to Randall Terry. You may not have heard of him, but you soon will. That's because he's challenging Barack Obama for the Democratic nomination in the US presidential race. He's doing so for one reason, namely to show graphic, blood-soaked images of late-term abortions during the ad breaks in the American Super Bowl final in a couple of weeks' time. Stuff like this would normally be censored, but if it's part of an election candidate's campaign video, local TV stations across the nation are obliged to show it. There are some who will argue that this is the ultimate example of free speech and that revulsion over what's contained in Terry's tasteful little campaign broadcast proves that abortion is immoral. But the bigger question is this: is it ever right to expose children to images of aborted fetuses? The pro-life groups who ply their trade with gory placards at pregnancy advice centres would undoubtedly say yes. But is there any moral difference between this and showing pornography on primetime television? If there is, it's difficult to spot. Now, here's an idea.
I want these times to lead to a more socially responsible and genuinely popular capitalism, one in which the power of the market and the obligations of responsibility really come together.
David Cameron there, speaking as if bankers and hedge fund capitalists dwell in some parallel universe where capitalism is cuddly and the markets live by a moral code. The question, of course, is can markets ever be moral, or are they by their very nature defined by greed? We've seen how the banks have responded to the economic crisis by amassing capital once again at the expense of the individuals and small businesses they screwed over in the first place. In turn, companies across the world are taking advantage of the downturn to force their staff to work billions of hours of unpaid overtime on the grounds that they're lucky to have a job. Meanwhile, Vodafone and other big companies have been let off paying millions in tax, while the little people, as the businesswoman Leona Helmsley once described ordinary taxpayers, are hounded for the last penny. See if you can find the morality in that. That was the infamous exchange between the Italian Coast Guard and Francesco Schettino, the captain who abandoned ship before his passengers and who's caused all of Italy to search its conscience on the question of duty and cowardice. But who has the right to judge unless they've been in that position themselves? Many commentators have drawn contrasts between him and Captain Edward Smith, who went down with the Titanic. It's a case of different era, different morals, or is it? Captain Smith's heroism, of course, allows us to feel good about ourselves as we celebrate the centenary. In all the excitement, you'd almost think that nothing else had happened here in the last century, such as sectarianism or those pesky old troubles. Maybe Italy has less reason than we have for conscience searching. Just saying.
That was Mike Philpott with his look at some of the big stories making the news this week. You've been listening to Everyday Ethics from the BBC with me, William Crawley. For more information, go to our website, bbc.co.uk/podcast.